Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Well, Jake, I'm glad that you're fired up after that one. I mean, not because of the game, but because people are going to need some energy today. It was a really, really, really ugly Seahawks loss. No one liked that one.
As bad as it gets, honestly. I mean, when you talk about what they had, the opportunity that was in front of them, what was at stake? I mean, look, you look at the wins in the NFL, they're hard to come by. And when you have an opportunity to be up two scores heading into the fourth quarter and you lose, man, that's always going to be tough. And the fact that, look, streaks don't matter. History, it doesn't matter. But it also is painful when you know that the Seahawks had the second longest winning streak, home opener winning streak in NFL history. That was snapped by the Tennessee Titans. I mean, you just factor in all of these different things, offense, defense. This one stings. This loss stings. And it 24 hours, it hasn't gone
still
away.
Still hurts, yeah.
It still hurts.
Well, it hasn't been 24 hours yet, so just...
Well, then that makes sense.
All right. Well, the Seahawks did have a 24-9 lead leading into halftime, and that turned into a 33-30 overtime loss. So Russell Wilson was 22 of 31 for 343 yards and two touchdowns. The offense put up 30 points, but they struggled to get much done at all in the second half. Meanwhile, the defense forced a fumble early that turned into a Chris Carson touchdown. That's great news. But they surrendered 532 net yards, including 212 on the ground, which feels very weird for a Pete Carroll defense. And the team as a whole was penalized 10 times for 100 yards. By the way, I was writing down all the penalties and going through them. It's honestly, like, you know, is it Anchorman? Who's like, honestly, I'm kind of impressed. That's how I felt writing down the penalties. I'm not even mad. I'm kind of impressed because they went from the first to the start of the fourth quarter before repeating a single one. And during that time, they had seven. So
it's unbelievable.
If you think about it, I mean, literally in order, false start, offensive holding, unsportsmanlike conduct, roughing the passer, unnecessary roughness, defensive holding, offensive pass interference. And then you get to the fourth before they repeat one of those. So you're kind of like, all right. The taunting penalty was whack, though. I mean, that was in there, too. But that one was pretty silly.
No, it was silly. But the problem with these penalties is that it hurts you, right? It allowed drives to be sustained. It allowed it afforded the Titans defense to not have the Seahawks offense in attack in terms of being able to, I think of the fourth quarter, you start out after you score a touchdown, and the next drive you automatically have a holding penalty by DK Metcalf that automatically puts you out of position, and you end up having to punt on third and long. So
yeah,
just those things, those silly mistakes that you saw along the way outside of DJ Reed's penalty, which you and I both agree was absolutely atrocious.
Oh, you, me, and every single person watching except for like maybe
Titans
fans.
That rule is a joke, is an absolute joke. But I just think that overall they hurt themselves. I mean, in a variety of different ways, every single way imaginable outside of turnovers, ironically, they found a way to lose this game. And it just, man, it's such a gut punch.
I was surprised by two things. One was just in general, the offense and team as a whole just kind of not being productive at all in the second half. The fact that they had a 24-9 lead at halftime and then blew it. So I'm not surprised Derrick Henry was great. Surprised that a 24-9 lead turned into a 33-30 loss. But I was also surprised by the amount of people after the game that, understandably, because people are fired up, there's a lot of emotions, so, you know, like, it's normal. But I was still surprised by the amount of people that were finger-pointing to, like, one or two specific people or even one certain side of the ball after the game. Like, I am shocked how many people, how many tweets, for instance, that I was seeing saying, Russell Wilson, way to go, Russell Wilson. You can't get $35 million and not make that play. And like, yeah, here's the thing. Russell Wilson needed to be a hero to win that game. To win this game alone, the Seahawks needed more from Russell Wilson in that moment. And you know what? It's unfair to tell someone to be a hero, but when you're getting paid $35 million, when you want to be MVP, yeah, you got to be a hero. That's kind of the crown that you need to wear. But also, if you left this game If you left this game feeling like Russell Wilson was the biggest problem and it's on him, like, congrats, you weren't watching the Seahawks game. You were watching the Jets, where Zach Wilson had three first-half interceptions for a team that's been trying to find a franchise quarterback for 45 years. Like, that is actually the game you were watching, because Russell Wilson was not the biggest problem. I just, that blows my mind. I mean, your defense can't give up 532 yards. I don't care if you say, well, oh my God, the offense couldn't sustain drives. Yeah, the offense needed to be better, but I'm sorry. Last time I checked, why is the bar so low for this defense? Why is the bar low for the defense? The defense has a first-team All-Pro linebacker that's one of the highest paid at his position and was very recently the highest paid at his position. The offense has a first-team All-Pro strong safety who is the highest paid at his position by no small margin. The offense has two first round picks that you've made with Jordan Brooks and LJ Collier. You've got two second round picks with Daryl Taylor, Marquise Blair also in there, and you've got Pete Carroll, a defensive minded head coach who's overseen some of the finest defensive talent the NFL has seen over the last decade. Like, why is that acceptable?
It shouldn't be acceptable. In no way, shape, or form should that be acceptable. I believe why people have so much angst towards the offense is because that this unit is pegged to be the better unit. It is led by a franchise superstar quarterback in Russell Wilson. It is supposed to be the group that ultimately you're going to win a Super Bowl because your offense is playing at a high level. So I look at the entire game, everyone wears the blame on this game.
Yes.
There is not one single individual that wears the blame more than anybody else, in my opinion, outside of the fact that you could point to, if you want to, and I know that some do, that you could look at the quarterback and say, when you have an opportunity to win the game, which Russell Wilson and the Seahawks offense, they had a chance to win the game in overtime with that moment. Those are moments that you have to capitalize on, you have to make happen. And guess what? I fully agree with that is the role and responsibility of the quarterback. But the ultimate loss does not fall on that single drive.
Well, no, and
right?
That's why
they put up 30 points.
Game.
They had a 14-point lead heading into the fourth quarter. I mean, this is a collapse of a magnitude that I can't even fathom. Like, I can't believe they lost this game. And yes, some of it is not being able to convert on third down, which drove me insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane and not acceptable. But Stacey, the other side of it too is, like you said, defensively, you give up over 500 yards on offense. You give up immediately a 2-yard run, a 60-yard run to Derrick Henry. He's great, but you can't give up that kind of run, especially after the effort that you've given all game long. And then you give up cheap, easy. You let Ryan Tannehill, not have to win you the game. He could just sit there and hit the checkdown after checkdown the entire game, or the entire drive all the way down the field. Like, didn't make him earn it at all. I mean, those are the types of things I promised myself that I wouldn't get
no,
mad.
No, but get mad. Everyone should be mad. That's what bothers me about it is way too many people. Look, again, I think that what you needed to win this game is different and also not sustainable from what you need to win a Super Bowl. What you need to get to a Super Bowl is a lot more than just Russell Wilson being hero in the fourth quarter. You know what I mean? It would be if the tables were turned, if Russell Wilson was throwing all these picks and the defense did a great job, I'd be saying the exact same thing. I'd be saying Russell Wilson cannot do that. They needed the defense to win this one, but Russell Wilson cannot do that if they want to get to a Super Bowl. It's the exact same thing. The defense cannot give up 530 yards per game while the offense is putting up 30 points and expect to get to a Super Bowl. 30 points, if you finish the year with 30 points per game, you'd be a top three team in scoring. Green Bay was 31-5 last year. The last time a team got 34, which is where Seattle was to start the year last year, was the Kansas City Chiefs in 2018. And that defense also gave up a ton of yards, but they averaged about 400 per game. So they needed 34 points per game from their offense, which hasn't been done since 2018. 34 points per game from their offense. And Seattle right now, by the way, is averaging more than 400 yards per game. Like, you have to break that trend. And I'm sorry, I'm not accepting the excuse that, oh, the bar is lower for the defense. I'm not accepting that excuse. Do you think Bobby Wagner is going into meetings this morning saying, "Yo, guys, it's Russ, great job, but honestly, the bar's a little lower for us, so I thought we did fine."
Yeah,
we're grading on a curve over here.
Oh, we're good.
Absolutely not. He's going into meetings today saying, "What happened?"
Right, as everybody else should. So when you talk about time of possession. The time of possession that the Titans had, they nearly doubled it. Part of that you can look at and say, all right, the Seahawks, the last three out of their four drives offensively, because I don't really count the end at the end of the half. It was basically a throwaway drive. They had the ball with 29 seconds left to go regardless. But I would say the three out of the four drives, you have the ability and need to convert on third down to try and wear the clock off. Particularly, I would say, after the 10 play drive that they had, the Titans had with 4:57 left to go, you have the ball with 5:46 on your own 30, and you cannot convert, and you have that penalty on 4th and 1 at the Seattle 39. I don't know if eventually they go for it. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see that. We didn't get to see if they were trying to draw them off sides or whatever. But that was a huge, huge missed drive that puts the ball right back into the Tennessee Titans' hands. And what did the Tennessee Titans do in the fourth quarter? They go 10-play drive. They go 12-play drive. They have these long, sustaining drives down the field. And ultimately, that's what took that time of possession away. That's ultimately how they were able to get back into that game and start to wear down this defense that really, really was putting up a fight for, I would say, the majority, or I would say most of the game, at least three quarters of the game.
Can we talk? We only have a minute. DK Metcalf had three of those penalties. 3 of 10 penalties were on DK Metcalf. The Titans declined two of those. But they did take one, a 10-yarder. That one was offensive pass interference in the fourth quarter. Doesn't it feel like kind of a weird start to the season for him?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely a weird start to the season.
I mean, I think he's a phenomenal. I'm not reading into it at all.
The weird thing is that, you know, Curtis pointed out he has the same amount of receptions as Tyler Lockett. So people that are saying, where is DK Metcalf? Why isn't he more involved in the offense? No, he's involved in the offense. He's just not getting the explosive plays that we're all accustomed to seeing, these big, huge, explosive plays or touchdowns for that matter. I believe that will come. I'm not in a panic about that. But when you talk about some of his antics at the beginning of games, I'm all for DK going in there and trying to be, you know, the bully on the block and all that. But do it through your play. Don't do it trying to instigate something right out of the gate, right? And I think that is the difference of what I've seen personally over the first two games, is that it's almost like the intention is to instigate and start something rather than just let your play do the talk. And if somebody gets mad and bothered by that, that's on them. So that's ultimately what I've seen from him.
All right, we're going to be taking your guys' calls today, by the way. Dave Wyman joining us in about 15 minutes. Before we get to that, though, it is time for Headline Rewrites.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Mariners took a series from the Royals this weekend thanks to the hot bat of Jared Kelnick, and no thanks to the inept starting pitching from Yusei Kikuchi. What is the real headline?
The real headline, it's not even a joke. It's just where we're all at right now, which is, guess we're wondering if Kikuchi's going to pick up that player option.
Yeah, I would say no.
Well, no. If Kikuchi will pick up the player option, because it's looking
He's got a one-year player option.
Yeah, I know
he does. It's looking increasingly more likely
unless
that the Mariners...
Unless he's getting paid significantly more by that player option, I just don't see him coming back.
You think he can get more from another team?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that sometimes you might need a new start. Sometimes through this, you're kind of beat, battered, and bruised. And someone like Yusei Kikuchi, who's had a long, storied career in Japan, maybe you go back. Like, maybe you finish your career there, or you feel like, hey, I need a new fresh start somewhere else with a different organization. This organization's done nothing but good by him, done right by him, but I'm certainly hoping that that doesn't happen. I don't want to see Yusei back here next year. I think that there's an opportunity to upgrade with this roster, with the starting pitching rotation, and I don't want to see it, and I can't believe we're saying this after the first half of the season.
It's such a bummer. Yeah, he was so phenomenal. And it's frustrating because, you know, his ceiling is still that phenomenal. He's just been so inconsistent about reaching it in the second half or since the All-Star break. and just before that. I think the good news, obviously, is Jared Kelenic coming out of the weekend. That was phenomenal. Two home runs. Gosh, how do you... Two run home runs.
There we go.
Congrats.
And then he had the home run yesterday, too.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's so fun to see. And I know that some people were saying, hey, maybe the Mariners would be more in this playoff hunt if you would have replaced Jared Kelenic's plate appearances with someone who would be better in that moment. But also, then you don't get some of that growth and development. And I know that there are people that are going to hate that opinion, but I feel like a little bit of that patience is being rewarded right now. And that is what you want to see now as opposed to next year when you really need him to start coming on.
Exactly. That's what you need. That's ultimately what you want. And as you're going through this season, they made no bones about what they wanted, what they were going to do. It was about development. It was about moving this team forward and moving their future into the present. And that's what's going on with Jared Kelenic. And it would make, I believe, everyone feel a heck of a lot better if Jared Kelenic finished on a tear heading down the stretch rather than not getting into the playoffs and also watching somebody that you're counting as a superstar potential player, a big piece of this organization, continue to really struggle at the plate. So for me, this is incredible news. This is great news. And I hope that it can continue against a series against the A's, who are two games ahead of you in the wild card. And you're going up against Sean Manaea, who's a really good pitcher. Let's see if Jared Kelenic can actually do that against good quality pitching in this league.
Headline rewrites.
The Huskies actually scored multiple touchdowns for the first time all season in their rout of Arkansas State. What's the real headline?
When nothing's going your way, sometimes it feels good to punch down a few weight classes. I'm saying this about my own alma mater. I got so much flack from people being like, oh, the Huskies should be proud of it. Yeah, it was fun. Like, it was fun to watch a game and have them just completely blow Arkansas State out of the water. And importantly, to be able to limit Arkansas State's passing attack. I did have some concerns that, like, well, what if they come in here and all of a sudden they're doing what they've been able to do all season against you. And instead, they did do what they've been able to do all season, but that was also allow a ton of points from an opposing offense. This time it was Washington who had the benefit of that, and it was awesome to see.
It was great. They needed it, right? They needed a get-right game. They needed something to feel good about heading into the next portion of their season. And as you're looking at the Washington Huskies, you're looking at their schedule. Now they start getting into Pac-12 play against Cal. You need something to go right for you, and you need to feel like you can build off of this type of performance. Now, do I have high hopes and expectations that now this is the point where the Huskies turn things around and now they're on their way to win the Pac-12 North?
Yes.
No, not quite.
Yes.
No, Stacy. No, I'm not quite there yet.
It's happening.
But if you're talking about what they needed, yeah, they needed to rush for over 200 yards on the ground. They needed to have a standout in the passing game. Jalen McMillan going for 175 yards. Very talented receiver, young receiver, needed to show that. Dylan Morris throws for over 350 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, you even got Sammy Heward in the game at the end. I mean, overall, this was a really good performance for you, and hopefully you can build off that. That is the hope and dream for Husky
fans.
Do
you think you'll see more from Sam Heward this season?
I don't think so. Okay. I personally don't, unless you're in these blowout situations or something else was to happen, but I really feel like the best thing for him, give him four games of experience one way or the other, however you do it, but make sure you maintain that redshirt year. That, to me, is what's most important after this year.
I thought one of the great things this weekend I saw on social media was Husky fans being like, hey, what if Montana all of a sudden becomes FCS national champions? That loss doesn't look so bad anymore.
Curtis, you did
I
not.
I absolutely saw
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. I'm
classic
absolutely.
Husky fan.
Yep,
guys,
yep, that's
we,
right.
We,
that's right.
Can
it's
we
a good
talk
loss.
About this? Like, come on. Like,
God. By the way, also, shout out to Fresno State quarterback Jake Haener.
Yeah.
Destroying UCLA. Boy, Huskies could use a quarterback like that, right?
Okay,
oh, wait,
stop.
Wait a minute.
Okay,
oops.
Wow.
Let's get to headline number
congrats
three.
To Arizona.
Hey, headline
rewrite.
We get Oregon this weekend.
I'll fire shots today.
Hey, we're the worst team.
Speaking of shots.
Here we go. The Cougs blown out by USC, a team that had recently fired their head coach and played most of Saturday with their backup quarterback. What's the real headline?
Bold of Nick Rolovich to try and get fired before the deadline to be vaccinated. It's really interesting approach to
can't get vaccinated if I get fired.
That's exactly
beforehand.
Right. That's exactly right. I like where your head's at.
So you think that this is an effort? This is an effort to
Oh, I didn't
not even have to come to that decision.
I didn't say that. No, don't pin that on me.
Just said that. Like word for word.
Well, here's the deal. They're not going to get any easier of a situation right now when it comes up, when it comes against Utah. I mean, they are a physical, hard-nosed football team. I mean, when it comes to Washington State, I mean, just my goodness, they go up 14 points. Looks like they're going to have a heck of a start. Maybe they're going to catch USC in an off day when they just fired Clay Helton. Nope. Delora goes down with an injury, and that their chances of winning that game went right down along with it. I mean, it was brutal from that point on. And how about Jackson Dart, kid out of USC, stepping in, freshman quarterback?
That's a great name, by the way. Jackson Dart.
He is.
Does he have a good
talented
arm?
Oh, yeah.
Can he throw a dart?
Yes, he can.
See, that's
a perfect
name.
He threw four of them, actually, in
can
the end zone.
Imagine if it was just ducks. You know what I mean? Like, your name is Jackson Dart.
Yeah, it's a great quarterback name.
Yeah, it's a fantastic. What's the best quarterback name you've ever heard?
I think Colt McCoy is right up there. Jackson Dart is a really, really good
player. This guy was never a quarterback. In fact, he was a friend of mine growing up.
He works in
construction. His name was an incredible quarterback name. His name was Colt Sweetland.
Stop!
Yeah, dead serious. Yeah.
God, he needs to be that or like a country swinger or singer. Country singer.
Look,
we're not that kind of show.
His own private life.
I started saying his last name, Sweetland. Sweetland, like spelled out Sweetland is his last name.
Yeah.
Yes.
Colt Sweetland.
Yeah. That's a quarterback name.
What does he do?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him in years, but maybe today I'll.
Colt, if you're listening, please let us know.
Yeah.
Instead of being a quarterback, he's like, yeah, I just.
Text into the Mac and Jack's text line 710-710.
Speaking of texting in, I've appreciated how many people, one person kept calling Jake Jack on accident, and it reminded me of Jake calling Colin, who called in to our show, Mark, over and over. And I imagine just whenever we disagree with Jake to be like, Jack, you're not listening.
Okay. All right.
Jack, listen. All right. Dave Wyman joins us next. Let's figure out what the heck happened to the Seahawks team this weekend. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Oh, man, it was a tough one for the Seahawks yesterday. Go from 24-9 at the half to losing 33-30 in overtime. It's game two. It is week two. The Seahawks are 1-1. By the way, plenty of other teams, including some teams that will be vying for a Super Bowl, still have the same record. So the good news is that it's early, but I don't want to say bad news. The troubling news is that there are some big issues you're going to have to need to iron out for the rest of the schedule, because you are in a very, very tough NFC slate, by the way, where all three of your divisional foes improved to 2-0 on the season in their game. So we're going to be joined in just a minute by Dave Wyman. And Dave Wyman actually joins us now. I lied to you guys. He's with us right now. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Well, I mean, it's good in that we are just talking about football and having fun talking about football, but I sure wish we were talking about a better game. I mean, what happened in the second half?
Yeah, that's a good question. I felt like they needed to get Chris Carson going and didn't really commit to that. I was trying to see, I just pulled up the NFL GSIS and, did we even target a tight end?
Not until the third.
We targeted Everett twice and Disley zero. So, yeah, there was that. And then, up front, look, the offensive line, they got it taken to them by a bunch of guys that were, not frontline players in the NFL. I mean, this defense was, they had six new players. They had an injury to their leading tackler, Jayon Brown, and guys like Tierre Tart and Jeffrey Simmons just took it to them. Danico Autry. I mean, up front, they pay Bud Dupree like $17 million, and he didn't even really make any plays. It was more about the guys on the inside. So there was that part. And then, on defense, I just think we need to be more of a physical downhill type of defense and just weren't.
Dave, you talk about that run game, and the part that gets me is that it's one thing to want to get that going. It's another thing to try the same thing over again and have it not work. They had, their first down runs which was the mostly what Chris Carson got. 13 carries, 11 of them came on first down. He had 29 yards, 2.6 yards per attempt. I mean, what is the expectation off of that? Continue to keep running the football in those situations, make adjustments? I mean, where do you take that?
Well, gosh, I mean, you know, look, the flow of the game, it's so easy afterwards, Jake, and you know this, to sit there and go, well, they should have ran the ball more and everything. And, you know, like a lot of times you'll see like a guy with a high average and go, well, you should have given it to him more. Well, it's situational, and I understand that. But Carson, just in over the long haul, if you get him, you know, 18 to 20 carries, that's typically, and by the way, you only need 59 yards a game now to get 1,000 with the 17 games. So, you know, it used to be 62.5. And, you know, I feel like they can get that out of him at least, you know, give him the 18 to 20 carries that he needs, though, in order to get there. But again, I get it that it's situational and there's times where, okay, it wasn't necessarily a good time to run the ball. So, but I just think, as far as physicality goes, this team just needs to be tougher. They have the guys to do it, but I think they need to be more of a smash-mouth type of team, and that's what happened. I mean, you have to take your hat off to Mike Vrabel. I mean, getting those guys going, I mean, they had so many different problems, not having Taylor Lewan at kickoff. Roger Saffold was in and out of the game, and he was really the most solid of their offensive linemen. And, you know, up front, yeah, it was just a butt whooping. They really, you know, they hung in there with, you know, with Derrick Henry and just kept giving him the ball and stuck with it. And then their defense, they just put together a bunch of guys that hadn't necessarily been, you know, like I said, frontline starters in the league. And they came in here and put it on us.
You know, Dave, you talk about the physicality, you talk about the run game for the Titans. I mean, it's an incredible task to ask a defense for a full 60 minutes to hold Derrick Henry off and to try and limit him. But what were some of the mistakes that you were witnessing as he started to get going there in the second half?
Yeah, just, you know, guys not staying in their gaps and, you know, over-pursuing and things like that. I mean, just not coming up and taking on guards and, you know, just smash mouth type of things. And, you know, Derrick Henry just continues to just lean on you. And then all of a sudden he breaks the huge one to the outside, which was just a really good play by him. But yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, the one thing I would say though, I think we need to start calling the taunting penalties, "He hurt my feelings." Okay, so let's throw the flag and say number two hurt number 11's feelings, 15-yard penalty. Because that, you know, I saw earlier in the game that DJ Reed had a knockdown where he was covering, I think it was A.J. Brown, and he celebrated. And, you know, he didn't look right at him, but he celebrated. Mm-hmm. And they didn't call anything. So, you know, there's that. Then there's the, you know, ridiculous penalty on the roughing the passer, which they keep continually show in super slow motion. And if you put it in real speed, there's no human being on earth that would be able to let up from those, you know, type of hits. It's just your body, your momentum. It's, you know, it's about gravity. I mean, you can't defy that. And so, yeah, those two things really bothered me. And I know it's, you know, not fashionable these days to sit around and complain about penalties, but I'm going to do it anyway.
I think it's completely fair. We've been complaining about them all morning. That taunting one was the most egregious to me. It's just a dumb penalty overall. And it was like 15 yards. That might have been their most yardage from a penalty outside of, I think there was a roughing the passer that had it in overtime, but it was just stupid. You mentioned on defense guys that like weren't sound with gaps or maybe sometimes overshooting the gap. Is there a specific moment or two that comes to mind where you thought that should have been played better by that player?
You know, not really. I mean,
it's all over the board.
It's kind of it was a weird game because you're like, yeah, they played well enough to win, and somehow it was like, you know, it was happening before your eyes, and you're like, well, I mean, more than anything, this is a lot of times, nobody wants to hear this, but, you know, tip your cap to the team that came in here and, you know, went on the road after getting a humiliating loss at home. And I just felt like they just made good plays. You know, there wasn't anything, you know, especially, I mean, I think we catch blocks a little bit too much. And I think we need to be more downhill. It's old school, but look, it used to be that if a guard comes off the block, you go destroy him. You put your hat on his numbers. You try to, you know, knock him down. You try to stuff him in the hole, and they just don't do that defensively. You know, they more catch the block and kind of try to get around it and make the tackle. And a lot of times that's 4, 5, 6 yards downfield. And so when you put like 8, 10 of those together, and there's like, you know, 2, 3, 4 extra yards every play, then it adds up.
It certainly adds up. And one of the other things, Dave, I was wondering if you could shed some light on this as well, you know, from a linebacker perspective. But Ryan Tannehill, on one of those drives towards the end of the game, all he had to do was literally hit the check down the entire way down the field, and he gladly did it. He did not get impatient. He just kept hitting the check down as they marched their way down the field. At some point, do you make the adjustment and start to really hug up on that guy, or is the thought that, hey, we're worried about these big playmakers behind us, and we're fine if we're going to have to rally and tackle?
Yeah, I guess I just go, they did a great job with that, because early on, Jake, I was complaining that we were stepping up too much and not getting underneath the routes, because there was a couple of routes, one in particular to Julio Jones, where Trey Flowers, you know, is on the outside, but he's looking for underneath help. But, you know, the linebackers are stepping up like play action, and then they're getting out too late. So then they started doing that, and then Tannehill started hitting the check down in front of them. So, you know, and I'm all for check downs, because, look, you catch the ball 3 yards on beyond the line of scrimmage, and a guy like Derrick Henry is going to get another 3, you know, and now all of a sudden it's, you know, 2nd and 4. So, yeah, they I thought that they handled that really well. You know, so early on it was like, man, get underneath those crossers. They start getting underneath the crossers, and all of a sudden they're hitting the checkdowns. They did a really good job with that. I just thought that was one of those games that you just had to say, okay, they got us.
He's Dave Wyman. He joins us every Monday to help us break down that latest Seahawks game. And also you can hear him except for today. Except for today.
Yeah,
you can also hear him
much,
every weekday for Wyman and Bob starting at 2 p.m. Thanks, Wyman.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
See ya. Oh, I should have said you can also hear Dave Wyman on the huddle. So many things to promote. All right. We're going to look ahead to the plays of the game coming up at 11. We've got your calls coming up later in the show. I've got the question for you. I'm going to give it to you a little later, and then I'll give you the number to call so that you aren't just sitting waiting, so you can think about your answer, and you better come with the fire, with the heat today. But before we get to that, speaking of getting fired up, what irked you most from the game? Like, what really irked you most following that game? That's next.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Driven by Car Pros Kia of Tacoma.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake and Stacy is presented exclusively by Car Pros Kia Tacoma. Jake, plenty of things to irk you from this game. Plenty of things. But yeah, there were things to be excited about. Tyler Lockett had a phenomenal game. By the way, 2 of Tyler Lockett's best career games, like single game performances, have come in losses. 200 yards against Arizona, nearly 200 yards in this one. It's very weird.
So what are you saying? That Tyler Lockett should never have an elite performance?
Yeah.
He should have an above average. He should have a good performance, but not an elite performance.
I am saying that. I'm going to do the research on this one. The second Tyler Lockett has over 170 yards, you're cursed. I'm saying, like, I've got to look a little more into it.
Could you imagine if they just got to a point and, like, early in the game where they've maxed out?
They were like, don't throw it to Tyler anymore.
Yeah, the numbers, they maxed out. We're at 150. We go over this. We're done for. We got to stop targeting this guy.
I'm going to look up his individual single game performances, but I feel like that math checks out. I'm like 90% sure.
Man.
Let's talk about, oh my God, it does check out. 154 yards, 178 yards, 200 yards, all losses.
Wow.
Yep.
I don't even want to think about that.
Because I want to bask
in Tyler Lockett's success.
Yeah.
But let's get to something that irked me. I'm going to start on the offensive side of the ball. I'm going to start with the lack of creativity on offense and the lack of running game offensively. That, to me, really bugged me. And the reason why the lack of creativity, what does that mean? What are you talking about? Well, I mean, in week one, you see a ton of pre-snap motion. You see the ability to get easy completions for Russell Wilson out on the edge. You saw the screen game come alive. And a big reason why that didn't all come together is because this offense is very much rooted. If there's anything you learn, is that this offense is very much rooted in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
Everything comes off of a successful running game. So why did they spend so much time trying to run the football on first down in particular? Is because first down sets up everything else. If you can have successful runs in this offense, it opens the entire playbook. It opens the naked game. It opens the screen game. It opens your play action game. That's where everything, it all is predicated off of. So if anything became glaringly obvious, it's the fact that you need to be successful in the running game. And quite frankly, your offensive line just got smoked.
They
They got manhandled
why
in the running game.
Successful?
And I would point specifically at two players more than anybody else, which was Damian Lewis and Kyle Fuller. They did not do a great job yesterday as I watched the film, as I watched them in the running game. They did not win the six-inch battle. I mean, they either got stalemated or they got pushed back. And that is a big area of concern to me. So when you look at that, it's not good enough, and it's not something that you can afford to have moving forward. Chris Carson's too good, and I understand Dave Wyman coming on with us earlier saying, hey, I would like to get them more, I would like to get Chris Carson more touches. If it's not working on first down, then let's find another way to get him involved. Let's find a way to get him involved in the passing game or on second down. Or how about instead of lining up on first down and getting in 12 personnel, which the Titans were clearly gung-ho for and ready to come downhill and smack you in the mouth, how about we spread it out, go to spread runs, get him in 11 personnel. There just wasn't really an adjustment to the way that the Tennessee Titans were ready to play that day, and that is what irked me the most.
Why wouldn't you make an adjustment?
Beats me. I mean, that to me is what's concerning, because as the game went on, as you start looking at this, you know, the way stylistically you looked at the way that they were passing the ball and the schematics of it, it felt very much the flavor of last year, which is crazy saying that this team scored 30 points yesterday. But that finish is what I felt based off of the style of passes and the fact that you're trying to run the football in ways, in areas that have not worked effectively for you all game long.
I'll wrap mine up quickly here. I think two things, if I'm listing out things that irked me, and there are some great suggestions from the text line, people talking about, hey, Russ needs to do a little bit more in big moments. Someone else says, more Alex Collins. You had one run for 25 yards and then didn't see him again. I mean, that could be one thing, too. Mine was, first, the penalties, specifically a couple penalties. That taunting penalty was killer. Like, it's 15 yards. 15 yards on a taunting penalty. When you are going to get into a lot of make or break, it's week two against a non-conference opponent. Say that this was for the conference. Say that this was a late season game against the Rams or 49ers or what have you, mm-hmm. and that taunting penalty gets someone into the red zone with a couple seconds left on the clock. They punch it in or they get a field goal. So you're going to tell me that moment, and I've rewatched it a million times. I don't know clearly what DJ Reed said, but it's like a split second. And the rule itself is so dumb, where it's like if you're looking at the player and saying it versus if you're just looking down at the ground. It's the stupidest thing on the planet.
Correct.
That can make or break a game, and it will make or break a game this season. And then next year, you know what's going to happen? It's going to be the same thing we did with the PI review. It's going to be something where it ends up messing up a game. We have this entire controversy all off season, and then they don't do it
again
next
season. Take it one step further. Imagine if DJ Reed had a legitimate personal... a legitimate taunting call, right?
Yeah.
Imagine that. Then later in the game, he does what he did, and he gets ejected because it's the second time that that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the stakes is. If he would have had another taunting penalty, personal foul penalty like that, he would be ejected from the game. I mean, it's just, it's absurd.
Yeah, I also, plenty of people saying, hey, like, I'm really, really upset also about not using the tight ends. Yeah, it was weird not seeing as many tight ends in there. We're gonna talk about a lot of that coming up later in the show. There's so much to get to, so here's where we're going to start. We're going to go to the plays of the game. We're going to go through the plays of the game, and there are plenty of highlights here. It's not all going to be a downward spiral, but most importantly, we're going to figure out what went right, what went wrong, what the Seahawks can fix. That's coming up next.